Hey everyone, welcome back. We're doing a second episode with LP here. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Before we were talking a little bit about, coaching setup and, his credentials and everything, the sport. So let's dive deeper into actual coaching.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
So what is your approach to trying new things with a student?
So the you know a lot of at least my opinion on this, and I believe people that have taken lessons from me would hands down agree with what I'm about to say. But a lot of what I feel are like some of my better analogies or descriptions of things are all tied to a shooter that was not getting the standard message. Okay. So in other words, I'll use the soft focus as a great example. So for years, I've always tried to describe the soft focus as like, you're like when you drive, you just kind of gaze out into the distance and you don't really, you see everything, but nothing is in detail. Your eyes are nice and quiet, but everything's real big. You got real great periphery. And I've always tried to describe that as the soft look or the soft focus. And about two and a half years ago, I had a gentleman that I was working with, real nice guy, super awesome guy, who was a lefty. And he shot back in the day where he held close, looked in the window, left on his call, and just kind of figured it out as he was going. And when I see that combination of somebody that I'm trying to coach to more of a, hey, you need to hold out here, look out here, incorporate your periphery to see the flash coming, that is very hard for them to do because they're used to holding close, looking at a fixed object, and then everything going as soon as they call. So you're taking somebody from that's like everything is moving except their eyes as they call. To, hey, I want you to be in this static position, use your periphery and look at nothing. That's like a very hard combination of things for a shooter to overcome. So on this particular morning, I was on short rest. I had a 12-hour day ahead of me. I had 3 half-day classes, and thankfully it was during the summer, so I had the daylight hours to do it, but I was running a class from like 7:30 to 11:30, 11:30 to 3:30, and then 3:30 to dark. So I had a very long day ahead of me, and then I had like a 2 or 3 hour drive that evening. So when I saw this as the first customer of the day, I'm like, dude, this is going to be, I don't, I, in other words, I knew it was going to take a lot out of me because normally that lesson, the first 2 hours is just getting them to look in the space with their eyes jumping around. So I said, you know what, we're going to try a different approach today. I'm going to have this guy look 3 or 4 feet off the window, but really see the window very well in his periphery. And then we're going to go from there and then ease him out to about two-thirds of the way back. Then hopefully, if things work out really well today, we'll get him around halfway back. So I thought outside the box there, instead of just saying, hey, hold here, look into space, and we're going to grind this out for the next 2 hours. I said, look, why don't we incorporate this whole periphery thing? And by doing so, it turned that lesson into about like the first 30 to 40 minutes were a little rocky versus the first 2 hours. So at that point, I was like, oh, this, I might be onto something here. Let's try it out, right? Let's keep trying it. And the first phone call that I made when I was leaving there, I called one of my best friends and my associate instructor, Fred Shantz. And I said, dude, I think I'm onto something here with the whole soft focus thing. Not only describing it like seeing nothing, all the things that I just described earlier, but really helping the people see something specific in their peripheral vision to help get the soft focus. So anyway, so I shared it with him, and for the last 2.5 years, he and I have incorporated that into all of our lessons, not just beginners, intermediate shooters, and also advanced shooters. Because you find a lot of times the advanced shooters or the expert shooters, they're generally doing a lot of things correctly already, but sometimes they don't know they're doing certain little details correctly. So then when those little details are missing, they don't know what to fix. You see what I mean? So this really helped. So basically when we said, when you say talk about trying something new, a lot of times it's tied to someone that is not getting the quote standard message. So you have to think outside the box, give them a different description, different analogy, different whatever. And when it works on someone that is struggling to hear the everyday message, then it's like, well, maybe that makes more sense than the everyday message. So then now, once I try that out and it works really well for all of the different types of shooters out there, now that becomes the new everyday message. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thank you.
So a lot of those things that I describe when people tell me, man, that's a great description, that there's always a student and a story tied to just about all of these little descriptions and analogies because of that. So anyway.
Right. So now, if someone were to take a clinic from you, let's talk about this. What should they expect when taking a clinic, when going to one of your in-person clinics?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, I have a little FAQs, section on my website to kind of tell them what to bring, what to expect. And I also, when I send out the reminder email of the schedule, I put all that stuff in there. But this is the description I give the people when I talk to them on the phone. Number one, we generally shoot, somewhere between 6 to 8 boxes of shells for a half of a day. In a half a day class, I generally have two, maybe three people. So you're going to shoot, probably a couple hundred targets. So I have them bring a flat of shells just in case we go over a little bit. And I'm going to watch them shoot. Well, first of all, I get background information from them. I do a little bit of screening. So I get how long they've been shooting, what they're struggling with, what their averages are, right-handed, left-handed, do they do anything with the other hand that they don't do with their primary hand or foot. And the reason I do that is because that can tip me off to maybe some eye dominance problems. If I've got a guy that's right-handed, but he shoots right-handed, but he writes and he eats left-handed, well, then that sometimes can tip me off that there might be an eye dominance problem. So I pay attention to a lot of the little details, which is why I screen people the way that I do. Colorblind, this is another big one. Like if you got somebody that's colorblind, and you're trying to tell them to look in a certain area, well, if the target blends in perfectly because they're colorblind with that area, it's not going to work. So, but unless you know that ahead of time, you're going to struggle through 10 or 15 different look points before you finally say, "What? I don't understand why you're not seeing it." Well, I'm colorblind. Oh, well, that explains it. So, there's a lot of questions in there that I'm screening people to tip me onto what I'm about to see. And I guess it's kind of just a way for my brain to get engaged and to pull the files that I'm going to need for that day, to help me be real crisp when I watch them shoot the first round. And I would say probably 90% of the time, once I'm done taking the initial screening questions, what I see is exactly what I was expecting to see. There's still some anomalies in there that shoot better than they led me on to believe. And there's some that, maybe inflated how well they're shooting a little bit. And then when I watch them, she was like, "Oh, okay, we got a lot more work to do here." But in general, it pretty much goes hand in hand. So I like to do that. The first round, I just like to watch them shoot. And the big thing that I tell them in that first round is do not try to do things that you think I'm going to want you to do. I want you to just pretend like you're coming to shoot around with your buddy and that's it. I'm a puller. That's it. Don't look at me as anything else, because I want to see normal. And that kind of describes like my coaching style is like, I'm not a one way or the highway. Like you got to do it this way. This is the one and only way. I am the one and only way. That's not me. That's up to Jesus. That's not me anyway. But, so what I try to do as a coach is I try to look at the shooter that's in front of me and say, okay, they're doing these things really well. And in general, that's what I start with is complimenting them. Hey, you do this well, you do this well, you do this well. And then say, okay, well, but these are the things that we want to kind of work on. And not only tell them, hey, this is kind of where we're making some mistakes, I'll give them the abbreviated solution of this is how we're going to fix said mistakes. And then as we start doing our station work, we go around the field, station to station, target to target. And I fix one thing. And then when I fix that thing and they're happy, then I fix the next thing. And then when we're happy with that, because there's generally probably four or five things I want to fix. And then I have to prioritize what do I think are the things that are going to make the biggest difference for this shooter. When someone says, well, they're not facing right at the window, well, they're facing 3 feet to the right of the window. We got bigger problems to worry about than positioning them right at the window. You see what I'm saying? So I try to pick the things that are going to make the biggest amount of difference in their game in the short term and long term, of course, versus trying to tackle all 10 things that are in my head all at once. So I kind of I feed them slowly, not, try to make them drink water of a fire hose. So give it to them in spurts, right? And then one of my big things that I like to do is I want to get feedback from them. Like I may look at it and go, man, that's a great shot. That looks really good. But to them, they're like, man, something still feels a little off. I want to know that. And that way we can talk about it. Because if that little cancer cell is in their head, it's just going to keep multiplying to the point where I'm going to lose their attention. So communication is big between the two of us. I would rather know more than not enough. I would rather know too much than not enough, because I can sift through what's important and what's not. I would rather them give me everything and say, well, let's not really focus on that or worry about it, or yeah, let's talk about that. So communication's key. And then the last big expectation that I really have out of my shooters, for me personally, is I expect them to just try the things that I'm describing. If it may sound strange, it may sound totally foreign, you may have never heard of it, or it may go against all of that free advice that they get at the gun club, the thing that got them there in the first place, right? But it's like, listen, I'm not a dictator. I'm an advisor. I'm a coach. If you want to listen, great. You've got all of my heart and mind in it. If you are hell-bent on your ways, or you want to get better but not really change much, I'm not your guy. I need someone that's going to be willing to listen, that's going to be willing to really implement what I'm asking. So the shorter way to say that message is to come in with a wide open mind. And if you come in with a wide open mind, we're going to get along just fine. And look, Fred uses this phrase, and it's a good phrase. He tells his students, challenge me, meaning question me, right? Don't be afraid to ask questions. And I'm the same way. When I tell someone to do something, I expect their full effort, but I don't expect them to do it blindly either. I want them to understand conceptually what I'm trying to get across to them. So I'm okay with good, tough, critical thinking questions, but if you're going to sit there and just be argumentative, I'm not your guy. I want people that are going to trust in me, believe in me, but also know that I'm going to give them everything that I have. I'm not going to hold back anything. Does that make sense? So, yeah, I think that answers the question about expectations. I probably
Yeah.
went a little long there, but hey,
That's all
it's
right.
better to be open and honest, right?
Yeah, thank you. And
So,
you did mention Fred Shantz, as your
yes.
associate instructor. So would you elaborate on his involvement with your coaching?
Absolutely. So, funny story. The way that our friendship really kicked off, so my father and I, we knew of him. He started shooting in the 90s. And I think his first world shoot was either 99 or 2000, somewhere in there. And so he had been around the game for a few years. And anyway, he was sitting in the stands on the stadium field one day, and I was in the shootoff. I was in the stadium field. I don't remember what shootoff it was, what it was for. I'm unsure about that, but he made the comment. He goes, man, that kid's a freak. But he meant it in a good way. But my mom and dad were sitting right behind him. So my mom's like, hey, who are you? What are you saying about my son? And he's like, I'm sorry, I meant it in a good way. I meant it in a good way. So the next day, we're off to Pizza Hut eating pizza together at lunch, me, him, and my parents. And that's where it all started. So fast forward a few years, I took some time off in 06, 07. And when I came back to the sport in 08, I caught Fred was one of the first guys that I talked to about squatting together when I go up north. Shoot the Detroit shoots, Ohio shoots, anything in that Midwest or on the East Coast thing. Because I had a set of guys from Texas that shot, but they never really branched out of the South. Okay. So anyway, when I reached out to Fred, he invited me to come stay at his house. We shot the shoot, we did a lesson, and then we were doing a free clinic in Ohio that they invited me to be a part of, him and his buddy Brian Rogers. And when I was they had three fields set up, beginners, intermediates, and more advanced shooters. And Fred went down to the advanced field to kind of help those guys. Well, the first two fields that started shooting, I visited those two fields. And then I was making my way down the third field. I'm like, Fred, why haven't you started shooting yet? Like, what's going on? So I happened to walk up while he was kind of giving them a little speech about the game and the passion in his voice, like just the tone of his voice. You can just tell how passionate he was about the game of skeet. So when I heard that, that night, because he was staying at Brian's house, we were all staying at Brian's house because he lives in Columbus, and that's where we were doing this free OSSA clinic. And I looked at him, I said, Fred, you really need to coach the game. I said, you're too passionate about the game itself to not coach. And he looks at me and he goes, well, I don't know enough. And I said, well, quite frankly, that puts you above 90% of these so-called instructors out there because they think they know everything and they just read a book. Or they just read some free stuff online. Whereas Fred is like, he's terrified to give people bad information. He wants to really know the ins and the outs of the game and how to properly explain those techniques. And I'm like, well, look, if you don't think you know enough, I'm telling you know enough already just by saying that, plus your experience. Said, why don't you just shadow me anytime I'm in the area? And he did. So for the next 4 or 5 years, anytime I was in the area, he would come out and he just listened. He'd follow me around the field. He'd listen to the analogies that I gave him, the descriptions and all that, and he just listened. And then we were in, it's like in 2015, 2016 time frame. I was giving a lesson to this lady, and when she said pull, she left ever so slightly on her call. Like it was just a touch. And to the untrained eye, you wouldn't see it. To someone that knows what they're looking for, you can see it, but you still have to be looking for it because it's that small of a thing. Well, I heard him under his breath behind me, he goes, man, she left early. I'm like, you saw that? Nice. So, like at that stage, I think around that time frame, that's when his coaching really started going to the next level. And then from there, he's just been getting better and better each year, to the point where he's now a master instructor. I think he was number 17. He's been involved in he's spearheading this new deal about the master level program, doing the panel. And Victoria, I think you're about to go through that this year, right?
Probably not this year, but
Oh, okay,
soon.
but soon.
Yeah.
Good. No, so last, he's kind of spearheaded that. So he again, he's just super passionate, not only about the game and shooting itself, but promoting the game and really trying to help people. And he is one of the very few people that I would trust or that I do trust in going to take care of students that I have been working with, or if somebody needed help with the game. I know he's going to steer him in the right direction. And I don't take those words lightly. That's what I'm saying. There's less than a handful of people that I would actually trust to do it and do it right. And he's one of them.
Nice. Okay. Thank you for that. And while we're talking about coaching, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
So how would you advise youth coaches, like coaches who work with a lot of youth teams, on correcting the mistakes that they witness?
So the thing that I see is what I've seen over the last, I'd say probably 8 to 10 years on the youth side of things, I feel terrible for those coaches because I feel they don't have the resources that they truly need. meaning they don't get the proper instruction on how to do technique or how to do this. Within the coaching world, like this past December, I had a team out of Michigan that hired me to come up there for 4 days. One day was spent just coaching the coaches on how to coach. And the biggest thing I think that where they need the most amount of help in our gun fit, understanding the whole eye dominance and eye thing. The basic fundamentals of the game of where to stand, where to hold, where to look. If you look for 10 minutes, you can find some fairly decent information just on the internet or on YouTube. But when it comes to the things that really make the big difference, I think are understanding the whole eye thing, because they, again, I don't think they really have the resources to fully understand it. Gun fit is huge. And then there's a couple things that within the stance world that I feel that they get that things get taken out of context. So number one, when I went up to Michigan and did this, when we were talking about the whole gun fit thing, all the coaches there, they thought none of them thought they had any eye dominance problems, and all of them thought their guns fit them right, and exactly zero of the six had no flaws. We had two guys that had an eye dominance problem and didn't even know they had an eye dominance problem. They just thought they were just getting a weird visual on certain targets, and that was just the way that it was for them. But it's like, dude, no matter what you do, things are not going to look right because you're right here. You're not right, you're not left, you're right in the middle. So we had to take two of the coaches. I think everybody's gun except one, we had to adjust. So when we go out to shoot, and after making those adjustments, they're like, oh my gosh, we had no idea. And I think, that those two topics right there, if there was better education for the coaches, and I've been trying to work with these different youth programs on like, hey, can you plug me in somewhere? Like, how can I help? Unfortunately, they're up to their eyeballs in administrative work. None of them have really, we haven't come to any kind of terms on how I can help incorporate them. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing more online stuff to try to maybe that'll help make the jump. But if you have a kid that's just starting out and you don't have a gun that's close to fitting them, if they have an eye problem, they're not going to hit the broadside of a barn. They're going to get burnt out after a year or two of trying, and they're going to give up. This one girl, going back to the Michigan example, she had been shooting for, she's coming up on her third year. She's a senior. She has never even shot a 25 straight yet, but she wants to so badly. And when I watched her mount the gun, I'm like, sweetheart, your eye is buried. You can't see. Like, her right eye was literally buried behind the receiver. Her left eye could see. So that poor girl was breaking targets as a right-handed shooter, just trying to figure out some kind of a weird image with her left eye in order to break targets. So as soon as we adjusted the gun properly, I can't remember if we had to put a small piece of tape on her or not. We might have. But nonetheless, once we got the gun fitted properly, she's like, oh my gosh, I can actually see targets now. This is what I'm supposed to see. Yeah, you're supposed to be able to see them, not, looking at the back of the gun. So, but again, I don't blame the coaches because I don't think they really have the resources for that. So I wish there would be more resources for them in the gun fit area, the eye dominance area, doing the correct eye dominance test to give them a tip as to, and then if there is an eye dominance issue, what do you do? Right? So and then lastly, in the stance thing, and Victoria, I would ask you, like, when you work with a lot of the ladies that you work with, or even like younger kids, you know how you always get the upper body that's going backwards, right?
Oh,
It's
yeah.
and the book, advise people, well, you got to lean forward. Well, when you tell somebody to lean forward, they generally interpret that as with their hips. So then their hips end up way forward, and then it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, the word that, and again, this is a little play on words, but the word that I try to advise the shooters like that is not lean forward, but bow forward. So their hips stay where they're supposed to, but their upper body gets forward. And then now you got them in a good stance. So again, It's a little bit of a play on words. I don't blame the coaches because they're taught, tell them lean forward, get weight forward, weight forward, weight forward. And it could be solved by either saying upper body weight forward, just put in upper instead of just saying get your body weight forward, upper body, this forward, or tell them the bow rather than lean. So those that would be the tips that I would have for the coaches is do your best to educate yourself on gun fit, which I'm here to help. Eye dominance, understanding that there's any, you know, which test to use. Definitely, I'm more than willing to help the coaches. And then the stance thing is getting the shooters to bow into it. And then lastly, I'll say, you know, equipment wise, I know we have you can buy real expensive things, but you know what? There's things that are out there that are really good bang for the buck. I'm not talking about the $500 Yieldies that you can buy at Academy either. I'm not talking about that. And it's nothing against the Yieldies, but again, it's really about the fit and then making sure that these kids don't get put on their butts when the gun goes off, you know, the recoil. So when you have a good gun, you know, spend a little bit of money on a gun, spend some money on glasses. That way they can see what they're shooting at. And they've got something that's not going to put them on their butt and that fits them decently. And look, you know, I think we can all agree here, they don't need to spend $10,000 or $15,000 to do that. They can spend a few thousand dollars and accomplish that. And when I went to SCTV Nationals this year, the amount of campers and gators and the hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in you know, the drivable, you know, campers there, you can't tell me that, you know, a lot of these people can spend just a little bit on some decent equipment to where their kids have a good time. They're not getting their, you know, they're not getting rocked from recoil and they can actually see what they're shooting at. So that would be my fourth and final point to advise the coaches on is to, you know, that would be my final point.
Awesome, thank you. So let's get into a little bit more shooting tips for our listeners.
Absolutely.
So if we have someone who wants to start branching out and attending some more shoots, maybe in other states, larger shoots, what
Okay.
advice would you give them?
Okay. A couple things. One, before I would say before competing in one of the larger shoots, I would say just go to a couple as a spectator. And Matt, I think we said this in the in part one where the people that you meet in shooting, especially skeet, so I am a little biased, I know, but in skeet especially, I think these are some of the best people in the entire world.
Yeah.
So when you by going as a spectator, it wouldn't take much to walk up to one of the shoot managers, one of the referees, or the chief referee, or hell, just a random shooter and say, man, how you doing? I'm totally new to skeet. I just started shooting a little, you know, maybe a couple of years ago. I've shot a couple of local tournaments. Can you just kind of walk me through what I'm seeing here? Oh yeah, man, come on. I mean, hell, half of them probably like grab a beer, let's go. I mean, you know. So, you know, they I would advise going just to see the lay of the land, how the shoot-offs work, how the rotations work, because a lot of the rotations and the squad times are different at these bigger shoots than the smaller 1 or 2 day shoots. So get a feel for the program. Understand what the options are. Like, do you want to play the handicaps? Do you want to enter the Oklahomas? Do you want to do any of these little side bet things? What are these side bet things? So, you know, understanding all of those things help settle the nerves for the first time that, you know, that they go to the bigger shoot. Secondly, I would advise, you know, having a lot of confidence in yourself, like in your own shooting abilities. So, when you, in other words, when you go to these bigger shoots, everything's magnified. So if you don't have a whole lot of confidence in your shooting, that lack of confidence is going to be magnified because you're going to be intimidated by the bigger shoot. So then, you know, just kind of, you know, it's not going to go very well in general. But if you can, if you have solid confidence in your shooting, you have a decent lay of the land. And then the last thing I would tell them is to have zero expectations when going to the first one. Because again, when the whole expectations and goals and all that stuff, and that's something I want to talk about while we're on here is basically, do I set any goals for the year? What do I advise on goals and expectation, all that? I wrote an article about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was called Confidence versus Expectations. And I think it was one of the best articles that I've written, especially when it comes to mental stuff. And the reason I say that is because that article probably got the most amount of feedback in emails and text messages than I've ever gotten before. So I'm basing that on the reader's response, not my own personal feelings. But anyway, what happens is as our confidence rises, our expectations out of ourself generally rise too. Well, when that happens, we're adding a lot of unnecessary pressure on ourselves. So that's why when I shoot and I go to a tournament, it's not that I don't want to win or want to shoot well. I just don't expect myself to do it. That way, I allow myself to run my mental program that I want to with minimal pressure. Does that make sense? Oh, you okay?
Yeah, sorry,
So
sorry.
that's all right. So anyway, it's like that. That's where it is. So like the shooters that are, the shooters that are going to these larger shoots for the first time, I would want them to basically have their goals, expectations, and such. Try to keep it basically at zero. Just go to shoot your game, enjoy yourselves, and enjoy the camaraderie at the end of the day. Because at the bottom line, at the end of the day, that's what it's really all about, So that and the last thing I would say is if you have the time, one of the things that I used to do back in the day, and I was going to try to do it again this year, is before going to that first shoot or that first major shoot, is try to simulate that tournament at your home club by shooting doubles on this day at this time. The next day, go shoot the 12 gauge at this time. Go shoot the 20 gauge at this time. The follow, you know what I'm saying? I'm like basically create your own tournament at your home club. And then that way it gets you kind of in that mindset. Does that make sense? So those would be, my top recommendations for going to some of those bigger shoots.
Awesome, thank you. And you did mention goal setting a little bit, so if you don't mind, we'll talk about that. Is there anything you would recommend about tackling them or working, managing your time on the practice field, anything of that nature?
I think a lot of the goal that I have one goal each year, and the goal that I have each year is to do my absolute best to take each shot, like every shot that I fire that's registered at a tournament, to give it 100% of everything that I've got. That's it. And I've never met that goal because I am human. So there's always, a few targets for the weekend. You're not 100% ready, but you call pull anyway, or something's not quite right. You know it's not right, but you call pull anyway. So there's always going to be a handful of those per tournament in general where you're going to have that letdown. But that's my one and only goal for the year. And the reason why I do it that way is because I think it takes care of everything else. If you're really giving 100% of your attention, you're giving that one target that's in front of you, everything you got, what more could you do? And I don't think you can do anything more than that. So if I'm going in with the mindset of, hey, I'm giving every target, everything that I've got, one at a time, I am focusing more on me and my performance than what the outcome is. And that's where a lot of people, I think, mess up when it comes to goal setting, because a lot of it is outcome oriented versus how I'm going to get there oriented. So, do I have some longer term goals in my shooting? Absolutely. When I get to the end of my career, I want to be the guy that has the most 400s, the most 500s, the most world titles, most high average leaders, most All-American team selections, most hundreds in the 410. Like, I want to be the guy that's got it all at the end. But in order for me to have that, I can't focus on that because if I do, I'm putting way too much pressure on myself. It's just going to get in the way. So that's why I kind of limit the goal setting year to year. And it's just more of like an overall, this is what I want to accomplish for the long term. And then each year, I think what a great goal for any shooter, especially newer shooters, is hey, just keep the trend going up. Meaning you're shooting better, you're feeling better, you're getting more confidence as a shooter versus I want my first 25, I want my first 100, I want my first 200, or I want to win a gun at a major. All of the Man, you're getting bogged down in the details there. You're focusing too much on the outcome. I want you to focus more on you and how you are going to accomplish those things. Which brings us to practice. You asked about practice. I'll try to be as brief as I can here because I know we're approaching our time. But basically, when I practice, it's all about fundamentals. And I start when I practice for the year, like when I go out and shoot for the first time here within the next couple of weeks. I'm going to shoot several rounds of just baseline targets, 1, 7, and 8, and incomers, the low house on 2, 3, high house on 5 and 6. And when I practice those, I'm going to practice them until I got tears in my eyes because those are the tar that's 2/3 of the targets. So if you can walk off the field having 2/3 of the targets under your belt, that's a pretty good feeling. So I focus a lot on those. Then I work my outgoers over time. This is over probably a 4 to 6 week time period, but start with those, then go to outgoers, then I work full station. So I'll put a couple of boxing shells in, shoot station one, take a break, shoot station one, take a break, shoot station one, take a break, go to two, shoot two, break, two, break. So then once I'm confident on the targets, then all the stations, then I'm ready to shoot rounds, and then I'll incorporate some doubles. But I'm very much, you've got to do the basics correctly. And if you can do the basics correctly, it makes everything else easier.
Awesome. Thank you. And it looks like we're approaching our time limit today. So
Yeah.
thank you. Thank you
No,
so
I
much for
appreciate
coming
it.
on. Yeah,
No,
it was
thank you
awesome.
guys. Hope to do it again at some point. But hey, anybody out there, if you guys have any questions whatsoever, please feel free to go to my website, breakmoretargets.com. Send me a message. I'll be happy to answer. And if there's anything that I can help anyone with, especially the coaches or anybody just starting out, please do not hesitate to get in touch and I'll do everything that I can.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you
Thank you
very
so much.
much, Paul.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a great one. Take care.
You too. Bye.